Good evening. Welcome to Council Connection for the month of May. I'm your host, Steve Dresser. Now that the weather is finally warmed up, many of us will be thinking about traveling to various places. I know I'm going to St. Louis this summer for the annual ACB conference and convention, and many of us will have other travel plans as well. So this month we'll be focusing on travel, all the various aspects thereof, booking trips, online resources, and of course the all-important packing. But before we get into any of that, let's talk to BSCB President Brian Charlson. He'll bring us up to speed on what's been happening in Massachusetts and what we can look forward to in the coming months. Brian, it's good to have you back on the show. We haven't talked in a couple of months here, and I imagine that despite the silence, a lot has been happening.
A lot has been happening, and a lot will be happening as we move forward in the Bay State Council of the Blind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that listeners have been hearing through our other means of communications, the Bay Lines Express by David Kingsbury and Bay Lines itself, edited by Bob Hache. So you do get some information in that fashion.
Of course.
But there are a number of things underway here right now. One is that Bay State has taken a significant portion of its funds, and instead of letting them sit there and languish in a very liquid but very stale account, we have moved it into an investment account.
Mm-hmm.
That's $100,000 of our assets, leaving about $40,000 uncommitted. And we're anticipating over a series of years to average about 5% return on that.
Mm.
So that would add $5,000 worth of disposable cash on an average year.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really looking forward to that because we've been running about a $5,000 deficit each year with our current efforts. So it's good to be in good economic health.
Absolutely. And I know for a long time I thought that the goal of any organization was to, if not necessarily make profits, at least break even. And it never occurred to me that one way to do that would be to invest our money and make the money grow for us.
And we're lucky to be in the position we are, to be honest with you. You know, we've had good relationships with a number of entities who have made substantial donations to the organization, not the least of which is, and this is the right time of year to be mentioning them, Major League Baseball Media.
Yes, very good.
Who are responsible for more than $35,000 of those investment dollars.
Wow.
And of course, they're also responsible for making sure that the At-Bat app is fully accessible. The statistics that you can get while using that application on your iPhone are amazing.
Yes.
Improvement again on last year even.
Yeah, and I have to say that I'm using that on the iPad, and it's been a very good experience for me so far. I've had no complaints at all.
Anyway, so that's going on within Bay State. Of course, this is the time of year that we had to get in our membership records into the national organization along with dues.
That's right, the beginning of March.
We did very well. We did very well indeed. We have 198 members.
Not bad at all.
Eight. And so this year we're going to the convention with an additional vote because we get one vote for every 25 members plus any majority of that 25.
Right.
So for all intents and purposes, we have the number of votes that we would have gotten had we hit that $200 member mark that we were looking for.
So for instance, just to clarify this, because I know this was always a confusion on my part, if, for instance, we had 25 members, we would get one vote.
Yes.
If we have 37 members, which is, no, actually, if we have 38 members, then we get two votes.
Two votes, that's right.
Even though we haven't really, plus the majority
of 25. Plus the majority of 25.
Which is 13.
Right. Which is how we ended up with that eighth vote this year.
Right.
Really excited about that.
Yeah.
Of course, that reflects well on the health of the organization in general.
Yeah.
We do, of course, now have the central Massachusetts chapter, Boston area chapter, Guide Dog Users of Massachusetts, BSCB students, as well as the old standby chapters that seem to have been here since the beginning.
Yeah, Charles
and,
River
and
Guide Dog.
North Shore.
There's no North Shore.
Not North Shore, South Shore.
South Shore, yeah.
There right.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway.
Flip the compass around.
There we go. So we're doing quite well as an organization in that regard. A couple of other things people might be interested in doing. We have established the date for the fall conference and location. It will be held at the Carroll Center for the Blind. And it will be on November 17, okay. November 1-7.
That sounds like the weekend before Thanksgiving, if I haven't misjudged things too badly.
Now, even though we call that the fall conference, and we have a convention in the spring, these two events are fairly close together this year. The state convention, which will be, once again, held at the Burlington Marriott, will be occurring on the weekend of March 8, 9, and 10. So March 9, that week of 8, 9, 10, we're pretty pleased with as a date for this year. And again, that particular hotel did such a fine job
this
last year that there's little to complain about, except the cost of things just keeps going up. We did some significant comparing with other hotels.
Yeah.
And the Marriott is no more expensive than any other place we might hold the convention.
No, and that's something I think that we sometimes forget. You know, we, as members of the organization, we tend to grouse and complain about the costs, but they're going up everywhere. And if we want the good quality, which we certainly have had, and I've never heard anybody say they don't like the quality of the last two or three years of the convention, if we want that kind of quality, we've got to be willing to pay for it.
Exactly. So, and of course, the national convention, that's what we've been talking about in my household.
Well,
One of the responsibilities of the president, which Kim Charlson is to set the agenda. So we've been talking agenda here. That's, again, going to be in St. Louis, Missouri.
That's right.
And it's going to be from June 30 to July 5.
Mm-hmm.
June 30 to July 5. That's the shift of the dates a bit. We're trying to shorten the national convention. Again, concerned about the cost that hotels bring with them. And also want to attract people who might be professionals in the field to come and learn and earn continuing education credits. We have that going for us this year. So if there are any professionals listening here who might need some CEUs.
And I know that's important for teachers. Unfortunately, as yet, they don't offer one for retirees. I wish they
did. They don't.
So I'd be there
we'll be having some really good things for people to learn as professionals in the field of blindness. So we're hoping that will both provide another service and draw in some more people who could learn more about the ACB and what we're all about.
That's right. And that's a tremendously important aspect of most conferences, that people can often attend a conference and get credit for things related to their jobs. And we haven't always done that. And, of course, it's now good that we can.
Yep, I'm excited about that prospect. I've got three different presentations through my other affiliation. I'm president of Library Users of America, and three of our sessions will be part of those CEUs come this July. But I'm also excited because I get to go see the Cardinals play against the Braves. So
that's right.
Baseball will still be part of my convention weekend, as is always my desire when we're holding the convention in that baseball city.
Yes, and of course, weather permitting, as you know from past experience, as you told us at the convention.
Exactly.
You have had your fill of non-trips.
Non-trips, exactly.
What was it, the 8 block or the 4 blocks, the 2 blocks forward and 3 blocks back bus tour?
Exactly. Well, you know, weather does play a part in these things.
As sure does.
People here in Massachusetts know all too well after surviving this year's marathon.
That's right. That's right. That was a cold one. I'm glad I wasn't out there.
Wet and windy.
Yes, it was.
I was happy to watch it from the television.
Yes, yes.
Anyway, so those are some things that are going on in Bay State Council. One major legislative activity that we're really anxious for all of our members and friends to get involved with. We, the blindness community, united, and so we're talking Bay State Council of the Blind, NFB of Massachusetts, the Carroll Center, the Perkins School, MAB Association, all of the blindness entities in Massachusetts have collectively put their support behind an amendment to the state budget. Unfortunately, the governor introduced a budget that was insufficient to cover the 2019 needs of the commission as a result of some changes in federal funding. Just to maintain what the commission currently does is going to require an additional $1.55 million. We worked very hard, and thanks to all of those who participated in this, in lobbying the House to include that funding in the original House budget. We were not successful there. We did get 50 members of the House to co-sponsor amendment to put it in, but our amendment was placed alongside more than 100 other amendments as a block and was voted down by the leadership on the House side. So we're now off to the Senate side. So we're looking to get more than 50% of senators to commit to including this $1.55 million in the Senate appropriations bill.
But even if that happens, it doesn't mean we get it, does it? Because
no,
if the House
no.
already voted it down?
Well, if we get it into the Senate side, and we have, by the way, if it doesn't happen in committee directly, then when it comes to the floor of the Senate, we have a sponsor for an amendment. That's Senator Barrett. Do you remember Senator
I do.
Barrett and speaking at our fall conference?
I do.
Year?
He was a most impressive speaker.
So he has taken on our issue as his only budgetary issue.
Wow.
Through this year. And he's prepared to, if it doesn't go into committee, come out in the committee's appropriations, that he will introduce it as an amendment on the Senate floor, and we'll be reaching out to everybody to contact their senators to make sure that they support that. We can't tell you what it is at this moment because numbers have not been assigned to such things.
Right.
But we will be sending out through all of our communication channels what that number is. It'll be a very short period of time between when we hear what the number is and when the vote will take place.
Yes.
So please do, throughout the balance of May, keep a special eye out for any communication from the Bay State Council of the Blind.
Yes.
It's likely to be on this one issue, and we need you to really get out there and support that funding. You might not think that it directly applies to you, but I'm here to tell you it most assuredly applies to you. If you're a VR client, vocational rehabilitation client, then you can expect that the commission is going to go under what's called order of selection, where there will become a waiting list for services from the agency, first time in its history.
Wow.
If you are a VR client, you're going to see financial support for you to get technology decrease dramatically. Your ability to get training, either from the Carroll Center or any other location, will be reduced dramatically.
That's right, because
in order
the commission
to balance the budget.
Because the commission funds the training that we get from the Carroll Center. They pay for it a lot of times.
That's exactly the case.
Yep.
Now, while that's all going on the VR side, on the SR side, or social rehabilitation, those who need assistance but who are not looking for employment, we're already beginning to see some of the cutbacks associated with that. Mm-hmm. The commission used to provide a large print calendar to everybody on the registry. Well, that stopped this year.
Yeah.
The Commission for the Blind had a vision mobile, if you will, that would travel about and in rural areas, I've always had trouble with that word, they have had to stop that service. The Senior Connection, which became extremely popular as a way for elders with vision loss to learn about things within the vision loss community and to interact with one another to know they're not alone, that had to be eliminated this year. We'll also see a inevitable reduction in force at the commission. Currently, the commission is leaving unfilled a number of positions, but I very much doubt that that will be where things end. It's likely to result in a decrease in the size of the staff of the commission,
which
means rehab counselors will have larger caseloads.
And that means even more waiting.
More and more waiting for what's going on in your life. So we need you to be there. Again, keep an eye out. Look at Baylines Express. Look at both the Bay State General Chat List, BSB-L, as well as BSCB-Announce. But we're really determined to make this happen. Understand that this is kind of our last bite at the apple.
Yes.
So it's this method or not. And if not, there's one other concern we have that is by no means official. That is, the governor's office has indicated through executive staff that they're not, that this is not currently on the table. But we know that this governor has twice written papers supporting the concept of consolidation.
Oh,
where
boy.
The Commission for the Blind would become simply a bureau within a general disability agency.
Yes, and we are not the only affiliate in the nation that's having that kind of problem. I've seen some messages just recently that indicate that that's becoming an issue of national concern.
Absolutely, yes.
Well.
Absolutely, it is. So you know, ACB and Bay State, as an affiliate, we definitely are involved in advocacy for funding for blindness related programs. We also, of course, are a very social group of people, so our chapters keep us engaged on a social level.
Yes, they do.
There's conferences I was mentioning, which is a great opportunity to get to know and learn from one another.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, as Bay State members, we need to be there to fight the good fight when we need to.
Absolutely.
To enjoy one another's company and learn from one another when we can.
Yep.
And that's the kind of thing I hope people bring into the spring. We actually have spring.
We do. And it's a wonderful thing.
So, I've sure been praying for it to happen soon.
I have too. It can't come soon enough for me, spring and summer.
Yeah, I just picked up my newly charged canister of gas for my gas grill today.
Uh-huh.
So there's going to be a burger on that grill tomorrow.
All right. Perfect. Well, Brian, thank you for stopping by and filling us in on all that's happening here. And again, you're absolutely right. We have a lot to do this year and a lot to watch out for. And you've given us a good direction to go here in the spring.
Well, everybody have a great spring, and we'll talk to you again next month, perhaps.
All right, Brian. Take care.
You're listening to Council Connection on the Talking Information Center Network.
And you can also hear our show on the second Tuesday of every month on ACB Radio Mainstream at 9 p.m. Eastern. During the Friday afternoon session of our spring conference and convention, we talked about travel. And we began things with a presentation by Sue Brandwell of Mind's Eye Travel.
My name is Sue Bramhall, and I started this business about 10 years ago. I have RP, and I've always loved to travel, and thought, well, then, there must be an awful lot of other people just like me that would like to travel together, and we could just bring sighted guides to help us on whatever assistance we needed. So that's how I got it all started. And I live up here in Maine, and the first couple of years I just, did a land tour trip up here and just started feeling my way through the whole travel business. I wasn't a travel agent before, and took a while to figure out what I needed to know, to book everything, what organizations I had to join, you know, all that sort of thing. And it started out to be pretty interesting and a lot of fun. The more trips I did, the more my clients would say, oh, well, let's go here, or let's do a cruise, or let's, you know, what about this place? And so bit by bit, I just started adding other types of trips to different destinations. So it works out that we do 3 or 4 trips a year. Our groups are relatively small. I'd say most are, you know, 10, 12 people, 14, depending. Usually the farther away, the group is a little smaller. Like when we went to Australia, New Zealand, we had a small group, same with Asia. But when we go to Europe or we've done stuff in the Caribbean, Alaska, New England, to do some Canada stuff coming up. Those groups are usually larger. And this year I have 4 trips that I'm doing. First couple, we're just starting next month, are sold out. We're doing a Viking River cruise starting in Switzerland, and we're all going to go and be in Zurich for 3 days. And then we go over to Basel, get on the riverboat, and start to go down the different waterways and go into France and Germany. And that trip ends in Paris. And at the same time, this is all, again, next month. At the same time, I have another group that's doing a Viking River cruise, and they're going from Lyon, France, to Provence. And then later this year, I put together a land tour because I had clients who wanted to go to Glacier National Park, which is in Montana. And what I did is put together a round trip, week-long tour, and we're starting in Calgary, Canada, and we'll head down into Montana and do 3 days and 2 nights in Glacier National Park. That's also the Canadians use the term First Nation tribes. It's the Blackfoot tribe that is from that area, so we'll be learning quite a bit about their culture and the history and buffalo hunting and all that really interesting stuff. And I also have a real small group that is going on the Danube. Again, that's a Viking River cruise. That's in October. And that one starts in Budapest, Hungary, and ends up in Passau, Germany. And that's all along the Danube. Very beautiful. And if you've never been on any of these river cruises, they're so much more relaxing and interesting than some of the big cruise ship trips. They're a lot less hectic. You don't come home feeling like you need a vacation because you've worn yourself out. You come home thoroughly satisfied, and Viking does a great job with customer service. So next year, our first trip is in end of March. And we're going to be going on, finally, going to be going on the Mississippi River. I've had quite a few people waiting to do something like this. And we're going to start in Memphis. And it will be on, American Queen is the name of the company, American Queen. It's they have 3 big paddle boats that they use. And they've refurbished them all and put them back on the different waterways. And so this one will be going from Memphis down to New Orleans. And there'll be time to get over to Graceland in Memphis before we get on the boat. And, there's a tour at the end in New Orleans, so and all interesting things in between. A lot of it is focusing on Civil War era history and music, a lot of music on that trip. Let's see, then... I have. Leon, Glacier, Mississippi. Oh, the next one is in June next year, and we're back with Viking, only this one is an ocean cruise, and we're going to go from Norway, from Bergen, Norway, and we're go down part of the western border going in and out of some of the fjords, and in Amsterdam. And that one, let's see, yeah, that's June 2nd. And I'll probably put together a post-cruise add-on package for the people who want to stay in Amsterdam for a few days before they head home. Amsterdam's a great city to walk around, and everybody's on bicycles, and that's the biggest hazard is to stay out of the bicycle way. But one of the things I wanted to try to do was go by the Anne Frank House in Amsterdam. I've been there before, but not the line was too long to get into the Anne Frank, but this time I want to make sure I get there. And that whole culture is really, really interesting. It goes way far back in all the merchant ships that used to go in and out of there. And there's just plenty to learn about, especially on some of those walking tours. And then I just posted on my website another land tour, just finished putting that together. And that's going to be up in the Colorado Rockies. We're going to, and let's see, this is September of 2019. We're going to fly into Denver, and we'll meet in a local hotel right near the airport. And then I have our drivers and vans picking us up the next morning. And we're going to go up into the western entrance to Rocky Mountain National Park. My family took me there last year, and they've been doing this trek every year. They live in Denver, so they go up every year. And there's a section, there's a stream along there, and it comes down out of the mountains. And, you know, that time of year, the elk come down, and they're in the rutting season. And the male elks are doing what they're called bugling. And it's the most fascinating thing. It really is, it sounds like they're blowing some sort of a trumpet. So we're going to go up there, spend the night. It's an area called Grand Lake. And hopefully hear a bunch of elk bugling. Excuse me. And then we'll, the next day, head over to Breckenridge, and we're going to spend the rest of the week with the Breckenridge Outdoor Adventure Organization. And they have a lodge, and they've got rock climbing, ropes course, kayaking, whitewater rafting. So this is the most, I'd say, outdoorsy adventure type of trip I've ever put together. So, and I have quite a few people already signed up for that. And we are limited on space, so if anybody wants to get in on that, they need to contact me right away. We could take maybe 10, 12 people. I've got 7 people already. So if that's of interest, just let me know. And then the next thing I'm working on, I have to work like about a year and a half in advance. most of my clients want to plan a year in advance on their vacation. So after we get done with our Swiss to Paris cruise, my husband and I are going to go over to Tuscany. And we signed up to go on this cooking week. It's over in the area where they wrote the book Under the Tuscan Sun. And we're staying in the same villa when they film the movie. But I've always wanted to spend more time in that area because the cruise ships stop in the outer edge of Tuscany, but I've never gotten into the heart of it. So this time I get to, I want to eat and drink my way through Tuscany. and so my husband and I are going to spend the week there. And I just found out also that Andrea Bocelli is from that area. So I was just doing a little research on what town he's from. It's up near Pisa. All that area is pretty easy. I think it'll be our own group. We'll have our own transportation, our own guides, you know, go at our own pace. And that's one of the things that works best for our tours is when I can make it just us. We're not required to, you know, do something at somebody else's speed, just our own. And it's just much more relaxing, and we can ask more questions and take in more information, spend more time on the parts of the tour that, you know, interest us. So I'll probably do something with Tuscany in, I guess, 2020. We're looking at already. Sounds kind of funny, but but it does take a while. And it takes a long time when I go to put these the land tours together. I have to do a lot of research online and get to know what's of interest for that area. And then I usually look at tours that are available and see which ones might work for our group. And then I try to find a way of doing it ourselves where it may be a little bit cheaper, where we can, again, do it at our own pace with our own guide. So there's a lot to the trips, but actually that's the part of the business I think I enjoy the most is putting together, because mentally I'm sort of there, looking at these buildings or tasting homemade pasta or sipping the local wine, and you're a mental traveler when you're putting these together, and I have to do all that ahead of time in order to figure out a price and put the package together, so it really all has to all be worked out fairly well in advance. And it's really the destinations, it's just suggestions from clients. And if I get enough, I get two or three people asking for the same thing, I'd go ahead and put it on the schedule, and we see what we get. If I just get, someone that wants one place and not many people have asked, but I kind of wait and see if I get any more for that. But that's kind of the pace that I go on. And, I've tried, last year I had three trips. Two of them didn't get enough to be booked. One was Africa, and the other one was a tour in December, and I guess people didn't want to travel in December. But I tried different things each year, and I can't repeat the trips very often. We've done Alaska twice, Hawaii twice. I haven't repeated the river cruises yet, but I probably will because they're so popular in Europe. So that's kind of where I'm at. I'm looking at Italy. I know people want to go to Cuba, but my husband's been there twice, and from everything that he says about it, it isn't worth us going as just going there as a destination, but I think it would be worthwhile if we did it on one of the where they stop and they're there for a couple of days. Most of it is visual, looking at the old cars and stuff. But they have interesting cuisine and some pretty fantastic music. So I'll be looking at that also. So, but then Donald Trump kind of threw us a curve on changing, how easily we can go in and go out. So I still have to research to find out, can we go, can we not go? And I'm finding there are a few cruise ships that are still coming and going out of there. So that's the other thing.
Maybe we could take a couple of questions if it's okay with you, Sue.
Sure.
Okay, does anybody have any questions for Sue? I could relay them. So the question at hand here, Sue, is that is it entirely visually impaired people, or are there other people, sighted people on these tours as well, and how does that work?
We usually have a combination on every trip, and what I've done, just as of like last year, I started, instead of just having one price, I have a couple different prices. If people are traveling all by themselves and they want us to bring a sighted guide, then that's one price. If someone is already traveling with their own sighted guide, then the rate is cheaper because they don't need that sighted guide service that we have to add on. So we have people who are completely blind and traveling single. We have people with low vision, some traveling with family members, some couples who are both blind. So we kind of have a little bit of everything. So each trip, I just modify however many sighted guides that we need to bring and adjust it accordingly. And typically I just bring a sighted guide for every two people. So they can, each one can be on an elbow and off we go.
Excellent.
And that seems to be the best combination for everybody.
Okay, I think we have one more question. Anybody? Okay, so I'll throw you one more loop here. Question at hand is, how do we know what's coming up and how do we contact you?
Oh, okay. Well, if you use a computer, you can go to mindseyetravel.com And my website is, I've been told, fairly easy to maneuver around. And there'll be a list of trips down the left-hand side, and just click on the trip, and it'll go in and give you the full description. And if it's something that you're interested in, you just give me a call, and I'll take a deposit. And then once you make your deposit, I can book your room with whatever vendor we're using. And then there'll be some details on when the final payment is due. You can make payments along the way if you want to. And I'll cover some details. And I try to get an idea when people call me, you know, what their needs are. You know, are they traveling with a guide dog? Are they using a white cane? How much assistance do they do? Do they have good mobility? And I just usually can get a sense of how fast we can move, or what everyone would prefer, what pace everyone would prefer. So.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there a phone number as well?
Yes, absolutely. As I said, I'm up here in Maine. Our area code is 207-542-4438. And just one more little comment.
Sure.
If people aren't able to go into a website, they can just call me. We can go over the trips. And if they do email, I can send them a copy of the description within an email. And that's pretty easy to read then.
That was Sue Brandwell of Mind's Eye Travel. Now let's listen to Jerry Barrier and Diana Leonard as they tell us about online resources for making travel plans.
So when we're planning a trip, what do we want from a resource that we use, whether it's a website or something else? We want a good, reliable, and accurate resource. We want good, accurate information. We want to try to find the most economical options, and we want it to be easy to use, which makes me ask the question, whatever happened to those good old travel agents that you could call, and they would do all that, and they did it professionally and with great aplomb. But it's hard to find travel agents these days, at least for the residential user. But there are a lot of resources out there. Most of the ones that you may go on would like you to sign up on their website and give them your email address so that they can send you all kinds of information that's advertising and that sort of thing. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it is a little bit of work to go through to get set up with them. So there are pros and cons to that. The easiest way to book an airline trip is to call the airline of your choice and just say, I want to go on Monday morning and come back Tuesday evening. Can you book a flight for me? It works, and I've done it many times. But the problem is you don't know if they're the least expensive airline. If you call American Airlines, they're not going to say, well, we have a flight, but there's a better one from, you know, JetBlue. So you have to kind of know what you're doing before you call the airline. You have to have a good idea of which one is the best one to call. And they do, as somebody said, sometimes charge you. In fact, I think most of them charge you for using their telephone service because they have to pay somebody to run that service. Sometimes they will waive it if you let them know that you're blind. but I think, like so many other services, banks would prefer you to go to the ATM machine than use a teller, and airlines are the same way. In fact, they usually, when you call the number, there's a recorded message that says, by the way, do you know you can get help from Travelocity.com? So let me talk about Travelocity a little bit. I think Travelocity is a pretty good website if you're patient and have a lot of time. But it is very labor-intensive to set up a trip with them, and it's not as easy as it used to be. Their website is not as accessible as it once was, but it is usable. But just to give you some examples, if you've never used it before, they want to book a hotel for you. Let's say you just want to fly somewhere. They want you to book a hotel, and they want you to rent a car, and they have all kinds of good deals if you're doing all those things. But you have to get through all those questions. And then they want to know, when are you going? When are you coming back? And from what airport and to what airport are you going? And are you willing to fly from a different airport? Because sometimes they'll give you better deals if you can take a flight from, let's say, if you're going from Boston, you might be able to go from Manchester, New Hampshire, or from TF Green in Rhode Island. So you have to answer those questions. They want to know how many people, how many of you are senior citizens, how many children are you going to have with you? Are your dates flexible? Do you really have to go on Monday and come back Tuesday? Because sometimes if you stay over a weekend, that changes the price, and lots of other factors go into it. What time of the day would you like to go? Do you really have to go in the morning, or can you go anytime? And then you get into seat assignments, and that gets more complicated. And then you get into also flight insurance. Once you've answered all those questions, it then asks you which way you would like to sort the flights. And most people sort them first by price and then by airline. And if you do that, you can actually see what the least expensive flights are. And I forgot to mention, are you willing to have one stop along the way, or two stops, or more stops, or do you really need to take a nonstop trip? Travelocity also has an iOS app, which has some accessibility issues. At least it did the last time I tried it on my iPhone. And they also have a Windows a website that you can go to.
What about Android?
Android?
Yes.
What's that? No, I think they do have an Android. I'm pretty sure they do have Android. Another program that someone had recommended to me is Kayak. Their iOS app, from what I understand, is pretty accessible, but I went on it, and again, it has tons of options. There's just a lot of stuff you have to wade through.
Their Windows, their website's terrible.
Yeah, I tried it too, and I couldn't make heads or tails of it. It says you can search for hundreds of flights, and I believe that because it really just has a lot of options. Their Windows site is just not screen reader friendly. So how about Popper? Any of you use Popper? Okay. P-O-P-P-E-R. Popper is... It's an iOS app. I'm not sure whether they have I think they have a website also. But Popper, you can tell them where it is that you would like to go, and they will put a watch on that destination for you, and you'll get notifications as flights become available in a lower price range.
Is it called Hopper?
Oh, maybe it's Hopper.
Yeah.
It is Hopper.
The app icon is a little rabbit.
That's right. I was thinking of Pop Money, which it is Hopper. So you use Hopper?
I think I've used it once. I've never actually booked through.
Okay.
I've used it to browse.
Yeah. It is Hopper. I apologize. So I want to tell you what I did the last time I needed to book a trip, which was just a few weeks ago. I fooled around on Travelocity for a while, and I just finally said, you know, I've had enough of this. I'm an Iris subscriber. I called IRA, gave them my credit card information because they're bonded and bound to confidentiality and so on. I gave them my information and had them log into my account on Travelocity. They told me what flights were available. They did what I could have done in 45 minutes. They did it probably in 5 minutes and with great ease. So if you're an IRA user, that can be a very valid use of IRA, and they're more than happy to do that. I don't think so, because the IRA representative can actually go on the website for you and talk you through it, and they do it in a very professional way so that they don't waste a lot of your time. I'm sure some of you have friends and relatives and so on who, when you ask them to read something on your screen, they feel compelled to read the entire screen. And these guys don't do that. They really do a very good job most of the time. So I highly recommend it if you are in a situation where you can use it. That's pretty much all I had to say. I would like to call on Diana now, who is going to talk to us about Google Flights. Yes.
Okay, so I am going to talk about Google Flights. It's a website. google.com/flights, FLIGHTS. And I actually used it to book my flight for this year's ACB National Conference. It's fairly easy. Immediately when you go to the webpage, it brings up the option to book a flight. You can also book hotels through it, but the main page automatically brings you to the to and from destination fields to book a flight. So it's all right there. Like Travelocity and other websites, it also gives you the option once you put in you know, your departure, destination, and dates, whether or not you would want to leave on a different day or come back on a different day, because it, you know, it'll say, oh, save $30 if you leave Wednesday or something. You know, you don't necessarily have to deal with that. So the flights are arranged in from price low to high. They are also sometimes they're grouped by airline, but I believe that the default setting is that they're arranged in by price. So you can go through and you can select your flight from, you know, let's say Boston to, I don't know, Missouri. And then when you are ready to book your flight, it will take you to the airline's website. So let's say Delta. And you would book the flight through, bless you, you would book the flight through Delta's website. So you wouldn't be going through a third-party website or app with, like, with Kayak or Expedia, but you would be using the Google Flights site to browse, if that makes sense. So Google Flights, let's say if you selected the flight already, like the departure and destination. When you hit the button to book and it redirects you to the airline website, all that information is already there. You just have to put in your info, like your payment and your all that stuff, like if you have a rewards account with the airline or whatever. But yeah, all that information is already there, so there's no extra work. I have not used it with a screen reader. But I assume that it would be accessible because it is Google and they usually are pretty good with accessibility standards. I think with anything, it depends on the operating system and the screen reader and a lot of different variables.
The airline websites, I've found, have become more accessible instead of less over the years, whereas things like Travelocity and some of those other third-party sites have become so complicated that they're less accessible. Mm-hmm. But I know I've gone on American Airlines, and it's pretty good. I still found it easier once I knew that I wanted to fly American to just call them. And there actually are a number of websites and apps that you can use. I have one, I think it's called Flight View, that you can track the flight. And there are other ones that will give you updates on how the flight's coming along. There also is even one you can listen to the radio traffic going on between the airlines if you choose to. I can't remember what that one's called, but yeah. Yeah, so there are lots of neat apps out there that can help in one way or another. I haven't found those to be so useful, but I do set my, when I book a trip with the airline, I set it to give me updates so that I receive text messages if the flight is delayed. And it will even send me one saying your flight's on time, which is comforting to know. So.
And do you do that in, you go to, say, Delta?
Yes, I did it with American recently when I booked, and it worked.
One part of traveling that I always find difficult is packing for the trip. Here's Nona Haroyan with some tips on how to make that process a little bit easier.
There's a couple of different things you want to think about is carry-on versus check-in. My recommendation, unless you're carrying a duffel bag or an overnight bag, is to check your bag in. The advantages to checking your bag in is that you don't have the hassle of having that bag with you as you're going through the airport. You don't have to worry about if you have to, you know, you've 2 hours to kill at the airport before you get on the plane, whether you want to get a cup of coffee or go to the restroom. You don't have to drag that bag with you if you're traveling by yourself. You also don't have to worry about the aspects of, you know, all the liquid things that we think about. Like, you know, you could just pack those things in your travel, in your bag, and not have to worry about it. The disadvantages, you waste a little bit more time when you reach your destination that you have to wait for your bags, or potentially your bag could get lost or delayed. But if you are going to check your bag in, it's the 3-1-1 rule. You know, it's the 3.4 fluid ounces that you have to worry about with all of your, you know, your liquids that you have to take on, you know, taking on the plane with you. You can only take one quart bag, Ziploc bag, clear bag, and like I said, only one. So everything has to fit into that. And I don't know. I mean, as ladies, we know we tend to have a few more things than can fit in that. But always make sure that you have that in a clear bag, because when you're going to go through TSA and you're going to go through the security, they have the right to pull that out, look at it, make sure that that stuff is according to the measurement. Otherwise, you're going to lose it if it's not. And that's not a good way to start your trip. So the next thing you have to think about are the necessities that you should always have with you when you're taking a trip. I highly recommend always having with you a portable, or I should just say a very packable, and they come in little Ziploc bags, is a rain slicker. You never know what your weather is going to be like. Always have it so you can toss that in your bag. If you're traveling internationally, you should always have your adapter for your electronic equipment, because obviously the current is different in different countries. So you don't want your appliance, your charger for your phone or iPad or whatever to smoke on you or blow up. So, which I've had that happen once before. So when I was in Germany, I thought I had the right one and I didn't. And well, anyway. So the other thing too is what you should keep with you at all times and not pack at all. Obviously things like your medications, always keep that with you. Don't ever put that in your suitcase. If your suitcase is ever lost, you don't want to have that issue be a concern for you. All of your electronic, like your cords to charge up your phone or your iPad, keep that with you, because if that bag is delayed and you don't have your phone and it goes low and you need that phone, our lives are on our phones, you don't want that to happen. Obviously, all of your materials that you need for your trip, identification, all that stuff you should keep with you. The next thing is keeping yourself organized when you're packing. The biggest craze with packing today are these things called packing cubes. Packing cubes are, and they come in all different kinds of configurations. They come in different sizes. You can get them anywhere. You can get them at Walmart. You can get them at Target. You can order them from Amazon, you know, Home Shopping, QVC. They have them all. There are two different kinds of packing cubes. There's the traditional ones, and there are also ones called compression. So you get even, once you put your items in that packing cube, it compresses it even more. It saves a ton of space in a suitcase. So if you tend to like to overpack, you can overpack because you can fit everything in that bag. My biggest suggestion is when you are packing is the roll method. With your shirts, or primarily your tops, is to fold them, lay it flat on a surface, kind of fold the arms in, and then roll it like it's like a sausage. And in the bottom of your suitcase, where there's grooves, where that bar is in that suitcase, those are the perfect places to just kind of tuck those kind of things in, putting those smaller packing cubes and fill those spots in. When you pack shoes, make sure you put, roll the socks in there. Tuck anything you can in those kind of places. And it keeps yourself very organized, and you pack a lot more. And because you're rolling things, you don't have those creases in your shirts because, in a sense, as you're rolling the item, it's cushioning itself within itself, and the garment comes out wrinkle-free. So always pack materials that are travel-friendly. You know, linen, not a good thing. If you have to pack a jacket or a suit, I find that dry cleaning bags, the dry cleaning bags are great to put in between layers because it helps the garment kind of like slide a little bit so it's not in place so tight that it doesn't have a little bit of movement. And with that, it reduces any kind of wrinkling or creasing that you want in your garment. So I think that takes care of kind of tips for packing, but the last thing is an app. If you're somebody who travels all the time, you don't need an app. You know how to pack. You know what you need, where you're going, what you're doing. But the app that I found that was the best was called Trip List. If you want, it's a free app and it's completely accessible with voiceover. And that was my issue. I was seeing a lot of free apps, but there was always some kind of problem with voiceover and it wasn't fully accessible. And a lot of them were paid apps. And I think it's not necessary to pay for an app for packing. So the last thing I want to say is try to keep yourself, traveling is a stressful situation for everybody. You know, you have the logistics of going through security and all the things that we have to go through now. It's not hassle-free. And, you can have anxiety about flying and traveling in general. So keep yourself as organized as possible. Have everything planned ahead of time so that you can make this part of the start of your trip as seamless as possible and try to keep it as stress-free for yourself so that you start your vacation on a good foot. It's a good time. So happy travels.
And on that note, we come to the end of Council Connection for the month of May. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please leave a message in the BSCB mailbox at 617-923-4519. I'm your host, Steve Dresser, hoping you'll be back with us again in June for the next edition of Council Connection. Meanwhile, enjoy the spring and take care.